Well, thank you, Chief, and thank you, Commander. And I will write today down in my diary. I don't know that I have ever before been introduced as the grand old man. And so here I stand. Thank you very much. It is a privilege to be here. My name is Barney Malekian. Until 7 months ago, I was the police chief in Pasadena, California. I have 37 years in local law enforcement and 13 years as a police chief. And actually, it's very appropriate if we're talking about stages of research or by size of department, Pasadena would fall right between these two agencies. We had 260 sworn officers. We had another 140 civilians. We were one of 45 police departments in Los Angeles County. There is a range just within Los Angeles County. Pasadena was the fourth largest department, if you count the sheriff's department, the largest being LAPD at about 10,000, and the smallest being a small town of Sierra Madre of 13 sworn officers. So there's a wide swing, and Pasadena was an interesting city. We have, I think it's the image of the city is really nationally is based on the Rose Parade and the Rose Bowl game. I think there's this image that Pasadena is 2 square miles of mansions, and once a year we have a parade. The reality is that it is the fourth biggest city in the county. It is ethnically and economically diverse. If you drive south from the police station for a mile, you're in an area where some of the wealthiest, most powerful people in Los Angeles live. And if you drive north for half a mile, you're in an area where 40% of the people live at or below the poverty line. It averaged a city of 140,000 people, averaged 25 murders a year. When I arrived there, most of them gang-related. So the issues of crime and research and how to marry those two and how to do policing in that complex environment without the massive resources of say a Los Angeles or a Los Angeles Sheriff's Department is significant. In looking at I didn't know until 45 minutes ago I was even going to be standing up in front of here. So here's my presentation for the group. But I thought I would touch on three areas that I think are significant. And I noticed that Charles, I think, rightly commented that when we talk about research in the field, we tend to talk about technology and about computers and about those sort of kind of things. And that and we talk less about the human side of our business. We talk less about the importance of leadership and the importance of sort of how to connect with people. I thought I would take advantage of maybe my tenure in this business to talk about three areas that I think warrant research, some of which is being done, and then talk very briefly about some things that the COPS office is looking at. In no particular order, I think. The first I would list is the issue of credibility and public trust and connection with our various communities. When we talk about community policing, and we talk about that sort of connection piece, I would argue that it's very likely that the small departments and the rural departments of this country are doing community policing almost by default. They do it, and they didn't long before it had a name. It is in Los Angeles and Miami and Chicago and the other sort of large urban cores that you have to address this issue. And in a minute, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the concept of police legitimacy and sort of balancing the two. But there's some fascinating work being done by Professor Tom Tyler at New York University in an area called procedural justice. And he's written a book. He wrote it actually back in the early 90s, and it was reprinted a couple years ago, called Why People Obey the Law. And the notion was that most of us in this business, and most of, I think, people perhaps in general, believe that people obey the law because they worry about the consequences. They do kind of this cost-benefit analysis. He suggests that that's not the case, that his research and other research indicates that people obey the law because they ascribe legitimacy either to the law or to the lawmakers. And that it is in dealing with the police that it is in the process of the interaction between the officer and the citizen, that it is the way that people are treated during that process that it may be more important than the outcome. Selling a ticket was what we used to call it, or selling an arrest in some ways is really nothing more than communicating this idea that, yes, I may be taking you to jail, or yes, I may be writing you a ticket, or yes, I may be responding to a problem that I can't fully solve. But if the person feels listened to, they may walk away from that with a greater sense of appreciation for what law enforcement does. And I think research in that area needs to continue and be focused. Second is the issue of budget impacts. And we've all talked about in every conference that I've gone to when I was still with Pasadena and since I've come to the COPS office, talks about budget, and the decline of funding. I believe, and this is not the Department of Justice talking, this is Barney Malekian talking, and so you can, you know, put an asterisk by it or ignore it or whatever you want to do. But I firmly believe that most of us are convinced that recovery means that sometime in the short term that the economic condition of our various departments is going to return to where it was a couple of years ago. And I don't believe that that's the case. I really believe that going forward, the nature of this economy is going to fundamentally change the delivery of police services in a way that I don't even pretend to know what it is yet. But those of you that are out here studying this business, the way that we deliver our services is in many ways inefficient. I've been in this business long enough to remember, you know, going on patrol without a walkie-talkie. I can still remember call boxes. They were on their way out when I got here, but they were there. They were still there. You still used them. You didn't get overtime. I know that's a shock. You know, a lot of things have changed for the better. But one of the consequences of that change is that we have become, we the police profession, both sworn and civilian professional staff, have become very expensive. We eat up huge percentages of local budgets. And the reality is that the delivery of our services is going to have to be done differently than what it is. I thought a long time ago when I discovered the concept of fiber optic cable and thought I'd had some kind of a technological epiphany, that sooner or later, if you think about the reality of a citizen calling to report a crime, particularly a misdemeanor crime that is not life-threatening, the idea of sending out one or two officers in a radio car at whatever the total cost of that is extraordinarily inefficient. When, in many cases, what people want to do, if you take Tyler's legitimacy piece, is they want to be able to talk to a police officer. Why not have a video conferencing capability as more and more people get computers in their home and can Skype and do things? It may well be that one officer sitting in a police station will be able to link via video conference and take reports. Now, that's probably archaic thinking by now. I mean, I'm sure that there are other and better ways that most of you know what to do, but you get the point of what I'm trying to make. We're going to need to deliver our services in some different way. And the last point, and perhaps because Pasadena was ethnically and economically diverse, a city of 130,000, 140,000 now, there are 23 languages spoken in its school district. The issues of race and diversity have become no less intense, but they have become far more complex than what they once were. When I came in this business talking about diversity, talking about community relations, talking about community outreach, meant essentially relationships between the African-American community and the white community. And today, it is about differences in language, it is about differences in religion, it is about difference in culture, and the use of technology and the need to do language research and to do cultural training and language training to reach quickly across these barriers that change faster than we can anticipate, I think is something that we really need to look about. I particularly like the emphasis that I've heard here in the brief time I was here about the need to link academics and to link research and to link practitioners in the field. All of us have watched programs or read about programs that are great, that are great problem solving. Look, we've eliminated crime, we eliminated homicide, blah, 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 blah. You know, it gets a nice press conference, it gets a nice ribbon cutting, it gets whatever it gets. And if you go back a year or two later to try to find out how the program's doing, it's gone. You know, either the chief left, or the mayor left, or the professor left, or whoever it was that was doing it left, and so did the program. I believe, and one of the focuses that I've tried to bring to the COPS office since I got here, is we need to fully partner law enforcement and the academic community in a way that does research to focus on what it is about successful programs that might make them sustainable, that might make them last beyond a change in leadership, and what would make them portable. If it works in Boston, for example, I talked about we had 25 homicides a year. We looked at what Boston was doing. I went personally one year and visited with the Boston Police Department. The next 3 years, I sent my gang unit to Boston for 2 weeks at a time. We mirrored the Boston project, and we too, Pasadena had 30 months of zero homicides, down from 25 a year. I mean, we looked at what Boston was doing, and we figured out how to replicate pieces of it in Pasadena. We have to do more of that, because in every one of these successful programs, there are aspects of it that are unique to that location, that are unique maybe to the personalities involved, but there are also bigger chunks of that that are easily replicable and easily could move from one jurisdiction to the next. And the National Network of Safe Communities through John Jay College and others are really trying to do that. So I'll close with this idea that there needs to be more research in how we deliver our services and in a focus on leadership and training, and particularly at the supervisory level. And as we talk about predictive policing and predictive analytics and the use of data mining and the use of technology, I would suggest that if we're not careful, we will fall into this sort of binary trap, that here, on one hand, is the use of technology, and here, on the other hand, is this human connection of community policing or values-based policing or whatever term you want to make that talks about the connection of one person to the next, and asks us to make a choice. And I would suggest to you, and as law enforcement professionals, that's actually a false choice. The choice, the goal, is to follow both of those tracks to Tyler's notion of legitimacy, to Tyler's notion of how are we effective as a profession. And I would hope that going forward, and I know NIJ and the COPS office are working together in August to have a large national working conference on this issue of procedural justice. But I am particularly hopeful that we do continue to do research in those areas as well as the issue of technology. So with that, I don't know if there's any questions, but I certainly thank everyone for listening to me.